This is The Other Side of Midnight on 77 WABC. I'm Frank Morano. Obviously, if you have a discussion about anything over the course of the last year and a half or so, it involves a discussion of COVID. And the one thing everyone seems to be asking is, when is this over? Well, it was a fascinating op-ed in the New York Post recently, which says that the end of all this could be sooner than we realize, or at least sooner than a lot of the experts are telling us, written by a man who's a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute and an associate clinical professor of surgery at the Icahn Mount Sinai School of Medicine here in New York. Also, probably has his mother in the Jewish Parents Hall of Fame because he's both a doctor and a lawyer. Gives me a great deal of pleasure to welcome Dr. Joel Zinberg. Dr. Zinberg, thanks for joining me on the radio.
Oh, it's my pleasure to do so.
Dr. Zinberg, so your column was fascinating. I quoted from it at length the day that it was written. But for people that haven't read it, and I've linked to it on my Facebook page, I hope people check it out, facebook.com/MoranoFan. You write that the U.S. is nearing immunity from COVID-19. How close do you think we are?
Well, you know, look, it's hard to say, you know, how many weeks, but barring a new variant, which is either extremely contagious or escapes the immunity that's out there, I think we're probably, you know, close to, in the next few weeks, being at the point where you are no longer having large numbers of cases and certainly not having large numbers of serious cases, hospitalizations, and deaths. I think what people have to realize is this is a virus that's probably become what's called endemic. It's going to be circulating in one form or another, perhaps for a very long time. But the important thing is how many people become ill with it. And I think we are reaching a point where we're probably going to reach a very low state of people getting ill from COVID.
One of the things I really enjoyed about your column is that when you're calculating the likelihood of herd immunity, you include not just the people that are vaccinated, but the people who've acquired natural immunity from getting the disease and recovering from it. Just for the sake of clarity, because I feel like we've heard some conflicting things from this on from different authorities. Is natural immunity, as far as you can tell, as good as immunity that's acquired through vaccination?
Right. So natural immunity, which results from having the infection and recovering, is something that with most viruses is as good or better than vaccine immunity. And that appears to be the case with COVID. There's a study out of Israel that suggests that not only is the natural immunity as good, that it's actually far better than the vaccine immunity. And that's confirmed with some studies from other places like the Cleveland Clinic, which looked at more than 52,000 healthcare workers and found that the natural immunity was just as good as the vaccine immunity, and it lasted for quite a while. And there are other studies indicating that the natural immunity could last for at least 12 months, which is at this point longer than what we know the vaccine immunity lasts for.
What do we think the magic number is in terms of herd immunity? If you're adding the vaccinated plus those that have acquired natural immunity, is it 80%? Is it 90%? Is it 95%? What do we think the magic number is?
Again, this is, you know, somewhat a matter of speculation because no one knows exactly which variant's going to be circulating at any particular point. But originally, people were talking about numbers like 75-80%, something like that. Now, when you had a variant like Delta, which was more contagious, the number goes up. But it's not, you know, it's still not as nearly as contagious as something like measles, where you need, you know, about 90-95% immunity for herd immunity. It's probably somewhere in the 80s. And, you know, we have at this point roughly about 80% of the population, maybe a little more, has either vaccine or natural immunity. And in addition, you have another 20 million people who've gotten at least one dose of the vaccine, which, granted, isn't as good as the full two-dose regimen, but it does give you some degree of protection. So we're pretty close, I think, to probably where herd immunity will come in.
Why do we hear what you're saying so infrequently in the press and from experts. I can't imagine that public health authorities want people to perpetually live in fear, but it seems like that's kind of the logical byproduct of not acknowledging what you've just mentioned.
Well, look, the from the public health perspective, we would like people to continue to get vaccinated. So I think there probably are some folks in that community who, with all good intentions, are trying to encourage people to get vaccinated, which is a very good thing, and I would encourage all your listeners to do. And perhaps that's the sort of most benevolent approach. Then there are others who I think, just to be honest with you, would like to have the crisis continue for a bit longer if possible.
Talking with Dr. Joel Zinberg. He is an attorney and a medical doctor, a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, and an associate clinical professor of surgery at the Icahn Mount Sinai School of Medicine here in New York. You mentioned that Israeli study, which seems to show that natural immunity is just as good, if not better, as immunity that's acquired through vaccination. I mentioned that a couple of times, in part because of your column, and I was deluged with a bunch of people saying, well, but that study is just one study and it's not yet peer reviewed. How credible do you find that Israeli study to be?
Look, the Israelis are probably the best in the world, number one, at getting the people vaccinated, but number two, at collecting data on this. And the Israelis are using primarily the Pfizer vaccine, but that was one way that they got early access to the Pfizer vaccine, that they agreed they would collect all this data and give it back to Pfizer so that Pfizer would know how to move forward with the vaccine in other countries. So, you know, I think the Israeli data is suggesting it was done during a period of time when Delta was dominant in Israel, which is unlike most of the other studies that are comparing natural and vaccine immunity, which were done earlier. And it showed that the risk of infection was 13 times higher for vaccinated people than for people with natural immunity. And that was when the people were had been either infected or vaccinated in the same time period, which was, you know, roughly about 4 to 7 months ago. What they had the luxury of also doing was looking at people who had been infected back at the beginning of the pandemic, so 10, 11, 12 months ago, and those people still had better protection than people who were vaccinated more recently. So I think it's, you know, it's a very interesting study, highly suggestive of natural immunity being good. And it's confirmed by some other studies. As I mentioned earlier, a study of 52,000 healthcare workers at the Cleveland Clinic found no difference. And, you know, you have multiple studies, both the Cleveland Clinic and some others, indicating long-term protection from natural immunity. So I think it's likely true.
So this is a question that I get asked a great deal, and that is, given what you just said, right, given that the Israeli study and the Cleveland Clinic study seem to suggest that if you've had the virus and you've recovered from it, you're in pretty good shape not to get it again. Should people, would your advice as a doctor and as a public health authority yourself, would your advice to people who've already had the virus be to get the vaccine, even if they've had the virus and recovered from it? That seems to be what Dr. Fauci is suggesting. Or would it be to skip the vaccine?
Well, look, there are two aspects of this. It seems like if you've been infected and recovered and then get the vaccine on top of that, you get a better immune response. But that doesn't change the fact that people who have natural immunity have already have a very good immune response, and it's as good as vaccine. So it almost becomes a question of is it like getting a booster after you've had the full two shots. You know, grant you've gotten very good protection from the two shots vaccines? Do you want to get even better protection by adding a third shot, a booster? And it's really very much the same issue. And so from the individual level, if you don't have contraindications to getting a shot, an extra shot, it's probably a good idea. And particularly if you're in a group that's very vulnerable to having severe COVID disease, like the elderly or people with lots of medical conditions who have seen to be the disproportionately among the people who get in the hospital or who end up dying from this disease. But on the other hand, if there's a particular reason that you cannot get a vaccine or a strongly held belief that you don't want to get the vaccine, you probably have pretty good protection already from either the two doses of the vaccine or from natural immunity. So, you know, it's a question of on the individual level, I would suggest people get it. Do I think mandating that extra dose is appropriate? No, I don't think it's appropriate because I think both from vaccines and from natural immunity, you already have pretty good protection, which for the moment appears to be lasting. That may change, but at the moment it appears to be good.
What are the public policy implications for what you're saying here, namely that we're getting close to some degree of herd immunity? We have in New York City vaccine mandates for restaurants in schools in New York and New Jersey. We have mask mandates for students as young as two. Given where we are with respect to this virus, what should the public policy ramifications of that be?
Well, look, states and local governments have long-standing authority to take various public health measures, including vaccines. And that goes all the way back to a 1905 Supreme Court case called Jacobson v. Massachusetts. It's not unlimited authority, but, you know, by and large, that authority will usually be upheld because it falls under what, you know, our system and our Constitution reserve to the states. And that's what's called the police powers to protect public health and safety. So from, and also businesses have the authority as long as they comply with various anti-discrimination statutes and the Americans with Disabilities Act, they have the authority to require vaccination or proof of vaccination, both for workers and for their customers. The public policy issue that I think is more pressing in light of recent events, though, is what's the federal government doing here? And the federal government has been pushing various initiatives like an eviction moratorium or most recently the proposal by the president that OSHA issue what are called emergency temporary standards to require workplace vaccination. The question is, does the federal government have authority to do that? And in the case of the eviction moratorium, the Supreme Court has already indicated no, not under the laws we have existing. And I think it's highly likely, should the OSHA actually issue those standards, that courts will strike those down as well. So this is not this from the public health perspective, this is an area where state and local governments can embark on it, and they're held accountable by their constituents. But this is not an area where the federal government has the authority to do it, and nor do I think, in light of the theme of the article, that we're closing in on widespread immunity, that it's necessarily advisable.
In terms of the eviction moratorium, it's interesting. It seems like the COVID pandemic has been the thing that anybody can use as the excuse for anything. If you don't want to go to a wedding that's too far, you could use the COVID epidemic as the excuse not to go. If you want to institute some public policy or another, whether it's an eviction moratorium or an infrastructure bill, you can use the COVID pandemic as an excuse for that. You mentioned the Supreme Court ruling on the eviction moratoriums. Let me ask you about a court battle that's playing out here in New York. Maybe take advantage of not only your medical perspective, but your legal expertise. We see this lawsuit working its way through the courts of these healthcare workers who've sued because they don't want to get vaccinated and they're subject to a vaccine mandate. They won the first round, as I understand it. How do you see that playing out in the courts?
Well, look, I think, as I mentioned before, there's pretty well established authority for organizations, for first of all, state government to require vaccines, and also for individual organizations, and particularly in the realm of healthcare organizations, where you know physicians, nurses, and other people working in hospitals are taking care of vulnerable patients. You know, there's pretty good authority that they can require these things. So I think ultimately, you know, I'm not familiar with the you know intricacies of this case, but I think ultimately the requirement is going to be upheld. And by the way, this is a requirement that many hospitals have for influenza, for the flu vaccine, that they require their staff to be vaccinated. So ultimately, I think that those things will be upheld.
Now, in terms of the vaccine skeptics in our audience, I know you're pro-vaccine as I am. I've been vaccinated and encourage people to get vaccinated. There are still people that don't trust it. There are still people that think this was approved too quickly, that we haven't had sufficient opportunity to examine the longitudinal studies or effects of this. What do you say to those folks who may be reluctant to get vaccinated for any reason? And I've heard several, some because they are looking to get pregnant and they're worried about infertility, some for a variety of other reasons. What do you say to the vaccine skeptics in our audience?
I say that these vaccines are some of the most intensively studied medicines that we've had in decades. You know, think about it. In our country alone, over 200 million people have received vaccines, and they're being followed very closely both by the companies and by the FDA. And by all indications, side effects, thankfully, are pretty rare, and they're usually not long-lasting. So, you know, this is much, there have been many, many millions more people who've received these vaccines than typically receive other kinds of medicines, but you don't see people objecting to those. Now, I know people with vaccines think, oh, well, why should I get a shot that's just to prevent something when I'm, you know, I'm healthy, and why should I risk myself to prevent something, whereas when they normally take a medicine to treat a particular illness? I think those folks ought to realize that the risks of bad things happening to them are much, much higher if they get COVID and get sick from it. In other words, no one has died from the vaccine, and the side effects are rare, but they're the getting severe disease from COVID is much more common than getting a side effect from the vaccine. So that's what they have to think about. And if, and particularly for people in the audience who fall into these vulnerable groups, people, say, 60 and older, or people who have other medical conditions like hypertension or obesity, diabetes, they ought to be thinking that they are risking their lives by not getting the vaccine.
Is there a danger in people embracing what you're saying, in terms of you're saying that we're pretty close to immunity because of all the vaccinated folks and of all the people that have had the virus? Is there a danger that people may decide to act more reckless, to go to a party with unmasked hordes of 300 people hugging, kissing, and breathing on everybody that could exacerbate the spread of this virus?
Look, there's always a possibility of spread, but if you are vaccinated, you are pretty well protected, and we're now at a point where most of the people you're going to encounter are vaccinated as well. So you have to realize, to become infected with COVID, you've got to encounter someone who is infected and is shedding the virus. And you've got to spend a certain, you know, like 15, 20 minutes with them in a relatively close contact. So that's become very unlikely when you're in a situation where you have more than 80% of the population has some sort of immunity and is extremely unlikely to be infected themselves.
Dr. Joel Zinberg from the Competitive Enterprise Institute, I very much appreciate the time this morning. Hope we can chat again soon.
My pleasure. Thanks.
If you want to comment on any portion of our discussion, you're welcome to give me a call, 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.